Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we welcome a colleague of ours, not in the athletic training realm, but in something near and dear to us because, well, we work alongside him all the time. With that, I'd like to welcome Garrett Hedin, MS-MHA LP. He is the safety specialist at Austin Travis County EMS. How you doing, buddy? Nice to have you here today.
I'm doing well. Yep.
You know, we've been trying to put this episode together for a couple months, so I'm glad we finally were able to work it out. Having you here is a blessing. We appreciate it because, let's face it, paramedics, EMTs, EMS system work so hand in hand so often with athletic trainers. It's really a multidisciplinary moment when we get together, so it's important to keep communication open at all times.
Absolutely, yeah.
So thanks for joining. Yeah, God, doesn't it though? Mm-hmm. A village on a good day.
Yeah.
Garrett, a little bit about yourself. If you can tell us how you got started in the field of healthcare, how you traversed the plane of where you went from, I believe it was Indiana, all the way down mm-hmm. to Texas, and what got you to where you're at today.
Sure. Well, thanks, Eli. Well, really kind of my first interest in medicine actually probably started with scouting. I was in Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, got my Eagle Scout.
That a boy. Hey, another Eagle Scout. I love it.
Nice.
How old were you?
I was 1 week before my 18th birthday. I was a cut it closer.
Hey, right there with you. I turned my paperwork in 30 minutes before it closed. Yeah, right there with you. Anyway, sorry, go for it.
Oh, no. Yeah, so, you know, doing the CPR classes, first aid classes, merit badge, and that kind of like was interesting. So went to school, kind of had, you know, pre-med, kind of kept a wide variety of options, starting off, you know, biology, do those classes. But really early on, my first year, I did a EMT class and, you know, really found that interesting. Actually got to finally get my hands on and do things. And one thing I did, ER clinical, like most EMT certifications, classes have 8 hours of in the ER, 8 to 12 hours on an ambulance is a pretty standard. So I went to this downtown, you know, public hospital, Indianapolis, Wishard Hospital, did a Saturday night, Saturday night clinical observation. Just kind of fell in love with it, got hooked, stayed like 3 hours late, you know, just watched the crazy things of a Saturday night in a downtown, busy urban environment. And then I think it was only like a week or two later, someone from the paramedic program there had came down, talked to our group in Bloomington. So I kind of switched things up and decided to go to paramedic school. Did my prerequisites the next year, you know, all the speech, A&P. All those fun things that schools make you pay for to make money. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that. and
all good.
then I spent about a year and a summer, pretty much full time schooling and different clinicals and stuff like that for the whole last summer, and got the paramedic and. then wasn't really 100% sure what I wanted to do. I like this paramedic thing, but I really liked school and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I kind of want to go back and figure things out. I was kind of nursing, still thinking a little pre-med, actually looked in athletic training a little bit, a couple different things. And then I took a health administration class and kind of really fell in love with that kind of side of things about being able to kind of assist from, the non-clinical, non-operational thing, and then change things up and went into health management bachelor's and actually went back up to Indianapolis and also started then as a full-time paramedic with Wishard Ambulance Service at the time there in August of 2006. So yeah, the same month I started back full-time student and full-time night shift paramedic, which maybe wasn't the greatest plans for my life outside of those two things.
That's a little stress all at once, that's for sure.
Yeah, oddly enough, those were the only 3 semesters that I got Dean's List. It's kind of you're forced to plan things out well and not have much fluff. And luckily, I was on a little bit slower of a truck, so I can get some of that work done. So yeah, I got my bachelor's there and then ended up going for my master's of health administration through the same IU School of Medicine. Great tuition reimbursement through work. That's one thing that
That's always helpful and nice, right?
Being able to only have a couple years of student loans afterwards and was definitely a godsend. They probably paid for between probably $25,000-$30,000 over the years of getting 4 different degrees and that. So they were very helpful in that. And so yeah.
Fantastic.
So I got pretty involved too after I got my master's of health administration. I was still working full time on the ambulance, but getting a little bit more involved with the state EMS association and the national EMS association, getting on different committees, workforce committee, which I had the fortune to chair that a couple different times over the last decade, and also kind of was served as a pseudo, lobbyist slash advocate. I guess I didn't get paid, so I guess it's just an advocate, but for the state. So I got to go to some of the, hearings and talk about different legislations and like peer review protections and helping have EMT basic providers be able to check blood glucose and like small things like that, which now we kind of take for granted. But for why are there, it's just not built into the laws. So it was I had a lot of joy out of that. And then nationally we they have like a National Day of Advocacy in Washington, D.C., like most national associations have. So went to D.C. a few times to talk to our representatives and stuff through our EMS Day on the Hill, walk around in uncomfortable shoes for uncomfortable number of steps and wonder why these blisters exist. Definitely learned about moleskin, mole foam, get a remind me of some of my old scouting days on those long hikes to
Completely.
gotta take care of your feet. So did that for many years. Kind of got started involved with a lot of the safety side of things because I'm like, I kind of want to, I can see some of the our folks struggling with things and getting injured. We actually in Indianapolis had a double line of duty death. Unfortunately, in 2013, two of my friends got killed in a ambulance collision. Which unfortunately is one of the biggest is the biggest reason that we get killed in our profession.
Oh my
And
God.
yeah, and I was on the National Health and Safety Committee at the time of that and our own department's Health and Safety Committee. So that was kind of a turning point and kind of getting involved on helping the helpers, so to speak. So not too long after that, a couple years later, there was a opportunity to be a safety officer with Indianapolis EMS. And I took that opportunity and got to kind of get in the safety world. I found out shortly that no one really knew a lot about safety in my position. My boss, my other cohort, we had two of us. So I ended up what I do best, go back to school. And that's when I got the master's in safety, or at least I got most of the way through. And then they had had to change the position up. And it was a healthcare, since we're part of the Health and Hospital Corporation for the county, and they had some budget cuts, and unfortunately it was one of the positions that was eliminated after a couple years. So went back to the streets as a paramedic for a year or so, figuring things out, and left with like one semester left with my master's program, which didn't complete until last year. But
But you did complete it.
I did,
Congratulations. There
yes.
you go.
Got it. Yeah, persistence. About that time, I was still kind of looking for opportunities to lead, and then found a great opportunity back in the land that I kept going back to, Bloomington, Indiana, with Indiana University. And this time was kind of running the ambulance service for the county, kind of co-managing all the operations, logistics, hiring, and all that, and started there during the fun time to start a new health management career in April of 2020.
Ah, yes, when everything was fun and entertaining at the same
Yeah,
time. Yep.
got to make a lot of flow charts and time and PDF announcements, and yeah, so that was a great opportunity, a lot of learning, a lot of stress. I had hair at the beginning of that experience. I know this is an audio only podcast, but I have lacked that hair portion for a couple years now. Yeah, and then things were changing up a little bit there, responsibilities. Then I had a good friend on the board of NAMT that talked about this great place to work, Austin Travis County. And then I saw an opportunity in safety pop up at the end of 22. And I'm like, you know what? This sounds like this could be an opportunity to come do safety again and a little bit warmer environment and than Indiana.
Little bit.
Yeah. And then I've been here last couple years, work with another safety professional in the office, who a sworn person, Roger Patterson. And yeah, we've spoke a couple different EMS safety related conferences together. And yeah, that's really kind of where I found a little bit of my niche to kind of help the helper, so to speak. And yeah, that's the long version.
That sounds good. And let's be honest, the helpers don't always look at helping themselves. So
Oh.
we're horrible, horrible about taking care of ourselves. We
Yeah.
give till we can't give anymore, and then that's a problem for us.
Yep.
So that's important. One thing I forgot to mention at the onset, happy belated birthday. It was your birthday yesterday, correct?
Oh, yes, thank you very
Yeah.
much.
For, forgot to mention that. So 28, 29, right?
Ah, yeah, perfect.
Of course, of course. Yes, definitely. Like I said earlier, I'm only 21, so going on 22, so it all works out. But happy belated birthday. That's
Thank you.
a heck of a transition you've done over the years, and how you've basically evolved into the position you're at now, and going from Bloomington, traveling down to Texas, jumping in that U-Haul and making a life change, really, heading down to Austin and working for Travis County. That's fantastic.
Yep, sometimes you just need that little bit of crazy change, and yeah, it's definitely been kind of helpful for myself and physically being able to kind of do some more physical things. You know, I think I told you before, I refereed football and a couple other different sports for, this is about my 23rd year, getting ready to come up and doing some high school and trying to get back into maybe doing some college officiating. And yeah, I've been able to get a lot more active, and actually I've lost about 150 pounds over the last couple years. And
Congratulations. That's
yeah.
awesome.
So yeah, sometimes that little change of scenery and listening to a few of those nutritionists and athletic people to
Doing
helps out.
what we're supposed to do for ourselves, not what
Yeah.
we're supposed to do for others.
Yeah.
That's good.
Those
And
things we keep telling everyone else to do, and we know that's a better thing to do,
yeah,
but
we're horrible patients. But also, I gotta tip my hat to you being an official. I did that for a snippet of time in college and right after college, and you couldn't pay me enough to get out there. Oh my God, that takes a right kind of mindset, right kind of person to be out there. So thank you, obviously, for doing that. But I bet there was a tad bit of a difference leaving Bloomington and going into Texas to officiate football.
That was a transition. They have a little bit different rules. They're the only state that still does NCAA rules because they're preparing. Yeah, that's one thing I thought I heard about but didn't know. But yeah, every other state just has high school rules, but for some reason, Texas uses college rules and college mechanics. So it yeah, it's a and yeah, they definitely go into some of those small schools in the middle of nowhere on a Friday night, though that atmosphere is just tough to beat, and I'm sure the training folks on here know that.
Oh yes, we know what it's like. That's for darn sure. And then taking care of anybody around in that situation, It feels like it ain't football. It's a religion. It's a way of life. So God bless you for that. And thank you. And I'm sure all the kids out there, even when they're mad at you, appreciate what you're doing. So that's fantastic. Going over what you've done and hearing what you've done over the years, you really must have obviously found your niche at a young age. And when you said it, it kind of hit me too. Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, all the way up. I always did gravitate to that first aid, CPR, environmental safety, health science. Those were to me, those were the easy ones. And it never really triggered in my mind how easy they were until you just said that. For me, that's, I guess, really was my first exposure to healthcare. What was the mindset? How did you realize this is kind of the direction I want to go because of the Scouts? That's just kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't think I really ever put it together until kind of later in life, and I was just kind of thinking back and, preparing for job interviews and stuff like that, and because the inevitable questions coming out. Okay, why did you get involved with that? And I spent in Bloomington about 3 years listening to everyone else's interviews as kind of the hiring manager, and I want to help people. Like, well, that's great, but give me a little bit more than that. Where is that? And like, made me kind of think back and like, oh wow, really. I remember CPR and tiger cubs, and
Oh God, yes.
the head pops off the dummy, and everyone's freaking out. And it reminds me now of Office, but but then I'm like, oh wait, I kind of did find myself gravitating towards that. And like when I had time to kill, I go to the health office and talk with the nurse and the paramedic or the doctor, whoever was on that day, and I'm like, okay.
Just kind of natural.
Then have interactions with the trainers when I was playing, football, or as a three-sport athlete, football, swimming, golf, a very odd combination of things. And
Whatever works, right? As long as you're having fun. Let's dive into a few things here. Safety protocols, super important. Health and safety, as we know. What are some of the key differences between safety protocols and, say, considerations in pre-hospital EMS settings versus, say, an athletic training venue? Because there's going to be a different outlook, a different mindset between what's going on, pre-hospital care, and the athletic training facility.
Safety-wise, and EMS is a pretty huge challenge because, I try to talk with other safety folks in, manufacturing or, construction or something like that. They're in a nice, controlled, maybe 10,000 square foot environment that they have ability to control for all these hazards. Someone had something crappy happen in the 1,100 square miles of Travis County. We can't prepare for everything. We're sending you out by yourself or with one other person. Your supervisor's not there, your chief's not there. So we really kind of got to give people the tools to make the best decision at the time. We can't, like the traditional checklist safety world is, very regimented. Like, oh, we got to do these 16 things before we do a job hazard analysis of this. Like, no, someone's kind of over there bleeding. We kind of need to do something now.
Got to take care of that kid now. You can't just hit a checklist at that point. That's very true.
But there probably needs to be some slowing down of things, and that's where we're finding that nice happy medium. Like, okay, here's where we can slow down. Driving too fast to get to a call. Remind them like this is why a lot of our people die. And if you do crash an ambulance and you luckily don't kill someone, that's the number one reason we get sued now. Also, is that. And then the last few years, you can't get a new ambulance, with chassis things. It could be 2 or 3 years before you get a new ambulance sometimes,
Oh
because of
my.
some of the backups. And so it's like, hey, even if you didn't, kill anyone, you didn't hurt anyone, you didn't get sued, you may now still be waiting 3 years to replace maybe one of your only 2 or 3 ambulances in the whole county. So you're borrowing something from three towns over.
That could be a problem. Yeah, you need that equipment in the EMS system. There's no doubt about that. Here's a good one for you, because I know we all in healthcare run into this all the time. What are some of the misconceptions that you encounter from non-EMS people about what you do, let alone the involvement when you come around athletics?
Obviously, we deal with traumatic medical, all that, so we may not have as much knowledge on specific. You're telling me about these different joint injuries or anything, and like, okay, that's interesting, but
That's
I kind
great
of
and
remember,
all.
yeah, I kind of remember some of that, but we may not be as detailed in some of that, and some folks may not even know the difference between BLS, basic life support, versus advanced life support. Like when I was in charge of kind of helping schedule some of the special event coverages when I was in Bloomington. So, different athletic directors and stuff would be asking, oh, can you have a BLS crew or ALS crew and all this? And some may not even know that difference, and basically know the paramedics being able to do IVs and do EKGs and just have that extra, couple years of training.
And when I'm teaching my boys, and I work at an all boys school. So the way I describe it, and tell me if this is kind of accurate, and please add into it a bunch. The difference, and I tell the boys, EMT versus paramedic. EMT, basic first aid, a little bit of advanced support, but really a paramedic, the difference is not just a jump, it's almost like that person is a physician in the field. Which is kind of a way to describe it. And I say that with a big asterisk. Obviously, they're not allowed to do, certain things. They're not a doctor, but that's the person that you want in a serious medical emergency to be there to help you. And I know in some of the rural areas or less urban areas, a lot of rigs will run an EMT plus a paramedic at all times. In more of the urban areas, like where I'm at, paramedics come in a separate rig. EMTs are in the ambulance. Paramedics come in a paramedic rig. How would you better explain it to the layperson, the big difference between the EMT as a clinical provider and a paramedic?
And it's very cliche saying, but if you've seen one EMS system, you've seen one EMS system, and there's so many different deployment models, delivery models. There's a lot going now because there is a shortage of paramedics into that model where we're sending a ambulance of maybe two EMTs, which that training is getting more and more intense over the years, so it's getting a little bit narrower, the difference. Like I said, to help kind of get EMT basics in Indiana, ability to check blood sugars, so they can check blood sugars now. They can, give Narcan. There's some places that even EMTs could possibly start IVs. I mean, that's pretty narrow. But then there's also
That's a heck
middle.
of an advancement, though, because when I was taking EMT course, that was definitely not taught.
That's usually an add-on module, and then there's also sometimes a certification between EMT basic and paramedic, like EMT advanced, or I forget what there's another name called there. There's a couple of different ones, but yeah, they're piecemeal, and then paramedics can, depending on the state, sometimes like Texas and Indiana actually both kind of have more of a delegated authority type thing. So if a doctor says, hey, I've trained you up really good, you can do, like, at Austin Travis County, they do finger thoracostomies. So they can open up a chest wall for possible, tension pneumos and stuff like that, because they've gone through months and months of extra training on top of everything. They've met with the doctors and have practiced side by side, and they also know that, hey, if this person is trapped in a car with XYZ presentation, this is pretty much the only thing that's going to save them. So they give them that basic knowledge. And
If you get out too far away, you're not getting that person back in time from the scene to the hospital for that procedure.
that's where things like also the newer up and coming blood, having blood available pre-hospital in the out of hospital environment, especially in those more rural locations. Because yeah, it can be sometimes 30, 40 minutes before you get
Oh,
to a
yeah.
hospital.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's Sports Medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
I work, and I say this all the time to my students, and I'm a preceptor for two of the local universities. My rotation, my internship in college was a 90-minute drive from college down into the Redwood Forest. You made a left and went in, and boom, there's a little opening. And that opening had the junior high, the high school, a little mini mart, laundromat, and a pizza place. Oh. And basically, they pulled from 40 miles around to get about 350 students year round. And the closest hospital was nearly an hour away. So when you're out there on your own, you got to be prepared for anything. And that I think that's where it really hit home, that be prepared, be prepared, be prepared, that I learned in the Boy Scouts. I was as prepared as I could be, or as I thought I could be, for anything.
Yeah. And I always say, kind of to along the be prepared Scout motto is, you know, train to what scares you, which when I was, you know, training a lot of paramedics.
I like that.
Training a lot of paramedic students, I'm like, hey, I hate breathing calls, or, you know, we don't have a little thing of people, you know, struggling to breathe. How can we help them the best? Or the psychiatric calls. And so just really train and overtrain to what kills you, which like in Indianapolis, like I still work there part time on the ambulance.
Just fly on up and for the weekend or whatever.
Yep. Last weekend, last Saturday and Sunday, I spent about 25 hours on the ambulance, just kind of due to different rules here. I can't work kind of in administration and on the truck, and I can't take off multiple weeks for orientation because I've got to focus on this. So I still work in Indianapolis just to kind of get that itch, remember how much it sucks sometimes, but get to do that clinical thing, you know, just it's tough to kind of get rid of that. But I go back for training like OB peds, because that's the thing that usually scares the crap out of people. I'm not sure what your rating is here, but
we're good. That's fine.
Sorry. But yeah, you know, the kids and pregnant people is what usually scares. So that's where they have probably by far the most training in that about every year. Make sure we're hitting on that. And yeah.
I was going to ask you, train to what scares you. What scares you? Is that the OB, is like you said, or?
Yeah, I was telling my partner on Sunday that somehow I've escaped. I'm in my 19th year as a paramedic. I've escaped having a live birth somehow. I don't know how.
You better knock on wood right now, buddy.
I pretty much after 10 years, I'm like, okay, the odds are, you know, I've helped out with some pretty crazy runs with doctors on scene that help do C-sections in the field and some other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That one involves a lot more bar time talking. If that's a.
I bet it does.
That's some crazy runs, and then other just bad ones that, you know, and I've been about 1 minute after delivery a couple of times. Darn, oh, wow. Just missed it. Luckily, they were healthy and everything. But
that's the most important part, yeah. Definitely. I love the balance that you have between being able to still get your hands dirty mm-hmm. clinically and staying in the administrative roles and taking care of stuff for colleagues, future colleagues, health and safety, creating emergency action plans, I'm sure, and planning and preventing. Nowadays, with the drive for collaboration between healthcare personnel and healthcare staff, what's something that you think we could do better with?
One thing, so with my last job in Bloomington, I got to attend a preseason for the football, IU football, back when they weren't good, about basically sideline work with the training staff. So we had a training with all the ATC students, the trainers, the doctors were all there, the team physician, and we had a bunch of EMS people that we had. So we had our We had our cart there. We got our, our big, huge people backboards with all the splints, went through scenarios and kind of did a, what was kind of newer that year, a medical timeout. And, we're starting to involve the EMS more with that. And so we kind of did a mock one of those and then talk about, okay, this is this far away. You know, we do this signal, that signal, whatever like that. And I really like that approach to things. And I think that's something that could definitely help get everyone together, because refereeing football in rural Indiana a few places and then had a medical thing on the field, seeing a little bit of a cluster going on. And obviously I try to, unless like the world, something really, really bad is happening, I'm keeping my striped shirt on and in my hat and not putting on my paramedic vest. But that's always a liability that, if I'm going to take it, I'm going to take it and take the risk there.
Right.
I like to,
right.
I measure risk for a living. So generally don't touch people, but like remember a couple times I saw like three or four, I think they were volunteer firefighters out there trying to figure out this new electric cot that's somehow an extra one got on the field when the other one was taken by the ambulance. And they're like trying to figure out how this works. I'm just like,
right, push here's this the button
right there. And then let me push this or unlock this. Like, how do you, like, just go on.
we actually have a referee out here in our area, football ref, who has a medical background, and that's his primary job. Whenever I see him, he looks at me, Eli, if you need anybody, I'm like, thanks, buddy. But I'm hoping we don't. Yeah. If I'm calling you, we got a problem. He's like, I understand. But, at that point, the officials, the athletic trainers, everybody involved, their whole goal is the health and safety of those young men, young women playing in sport. And when you need more hands on deck, it's nice to know you have somebody there to pull over.
Yeah, I think it was last year or the year before the big EMS Expo national show. I think it was the initial opening keynote was the providers at the Cincinnati Bengals game with DeMar Hamlin.
DeMar Hamlin, yep,
yeah,
of course.
And then talking
of
about
course.
That, just I remember watching that live from down here, and it was just, it's
yeah.
Like, wow, just such a, everything just worked out perfect,
yep.
And integration, everything, got
yep.
To talk. And I know they share their stories many a times about, the collaboration and teamwork that went into that. And that was just kind of a help show that, and I know the umpire that was next to the, when he passed out from, I used to referee with him in Indiana. So I was like, reached out to him. Like, hey, that is some crazy stuff. Good luck
yeah.
with, I hope.
Yeah.
That was a great example of that teamwork with everyone. And
collaboration was perfect with as you said, with the result you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
always hoping for. What an event when that happened. And thank God there were people there on the ball, knowing exactly what to do, and took care of it. I think they had what, like 70 people on the sidelines between
yeah.
between both sidelines, taking care of this one individual, and everything fell into place. It
yeah.
Was what a time, what a moment. Just thank God he's okay. That outcome could have been so much different, but
yeah.
Little luck is always good, but having the skill to take care of them. So you do a lot nationally, as you said earlier, on the is it NAEMT?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
committee.
National Association of EMTs.
Now, I mean, I've done a little bit over the years with our organizations, and volunteering is always fun because you get to make a difference, and it makes you feel good because you're helping your profession and you're helping others. What kind of got you going in the volunteer route at the national level?
So I had 1 year between my undergrad when I was, okay, I'm a paramedic, I got a bachelor's in health management. I could just kind of go the typical street supervisor. That I went to a national conference and then started listening to speakers. I'm like, this is pretty cool. They're doing some cool stuff. And so then I went to one the next year. And then I think it was my third year, I saw something about a board meeting for NAEMT. I was going to Vegas for a week for a conference. And I'm sure like everyone thinks like, hey, I'm going to Vegas for a week. Let me wake up at 6 a.m. and go to a board meeting. I mean, that's just too much excitement to pass up. So I'm like, first, after trying to find the meeting, which was, Las Vegas Convention Center from 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it was difficult. I remember that.
But finally found it. I'm like, whoa. Like, I remember listening to a podcast from him and him. And they're talking about some really cool big level stuff. And then I found out, like, oh, the rest of the day we're having open committee meetings. So I'm like, all right, let me show up. And like, oh, this is pretty interesting. You guys are talking some cool stuff. And showing up, that was kind of the biggest thing. And then the next year, I showed up again. And then at that point, I'm like, oh, might as well email the president and ask, hey, do you need help on these committees? And that's kind of how I joined the Health and Safety Committee. And then I think for 1 year before they disbanded the Social Media Committee, because that's this newfangled social media thing we should be involved with.
Newfangled, love that, yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, then I was actually, I think I didn't talk about it much when I was about my experience, but I spent about 3 or 4 years as the union president for Indianapolis EMS. So spent a few years kind of on that labor side of things, which was odd because I actually had a master's in health administration at the time of that. So I kind of had a little bit of blend of both worlds, but I got to see things from some different perspectives. And
that would be interesting. Yeah.
So they kind of found that was an interesting combination. And that's when they combined the Health and Safety Committee and added more workforce. And that's when they started the Workforce Committee. They asked me to be the chair, the inaugural chair of that. And yeah, then that was, well, about 8 or 9 years ago. I stepped away from the chair. I've always stayed on the committee, but I stepped away from the chair when I went back to get my master's in safety. And then they went with someone who was currently on the board a few months ago. So I am still on there. Just got done doing some projects. And I like kind of doing those different projects, looking at big reports, doing surveys on paramedic safety and violence against EMS providers is a huge, huge hot topic item.
That's horrible. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be a hot topic. But yeah. So first off, I loved your comment, showing up.
Yeah.
That was it. Showing up at a conference. Again, 6 a.m. in Vegas. I would just stay up till 6 a.m. in Vegas. Yeah. I wouldn't just, walk in the door. But, you know, that's it. Sometimes it's just showing up and finding that, you know, this is your passion. This is what you want to do. Why not get involved?
Yeah, I tried for a while to go to one weird conference, something that I will know less than two people at a conference, just to see, like, okay, is this something, a meeting? I remember going to some, like, you know, hearing protection thing when I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting. Got a cool few free samples. And then I don't really think I need to do anything more about this, but maybe make one or two connections. And, you know, and also the cliche of going to a conference and you get the most out of conversations at the bar. And,
you know, there's something to be said about the interactions of networking later in the day around wood and brass area, right? Yeah. Translation. Yeah. Sitting at the bar, great networking opportunity.
Yeah.
So true. So true. I always tell my friends, you're looking for me. If you don't see me in the room, I'm over at the bar. Hate to say it, but I don't. It's the truth. Yeah, it's the truth. Healthcare providers, that's where we go. You've had a very cool, well-rounded, and currently well-rounded career at this point. Love how you've just evolved and kept changing just enough to move into the next role, mold into the next role. And with that, how do you see the future of EMS evolving?
Well, I think biggest thing the last 5 to 10 years has really been this concept called mobile integrated healthcare, or you know, community paramedics. Basically, just not our typical you call, we haul, that's all kind of model of EMS. And you know, so we're working on some of the reimbursement stuff as well, because most of the time, especially federally, EMS only gets paid if we transport someone. But hey, we're sending this person that has this wide variety of knowledge out to this thing, and if we give them maybe a little bit extra of education, they can say, you know what, I know you have a fever and this, there's a lot of flu going around, can I maybe do a telemedicine consult with a doctor, get you prescription, go to over to the CVS and fill that, besides going to $1,100 ER bill where you're going to sit for 5 hours.
Or even if they're ignoring it for a few days and it gets worse, and then they end up in the ER for a $10,000 bill.
Yeah.
You just took the workload off of the emergency medical system, transporting and stuff, and then also the hospital. You took that workload because you caught it beforehand, saving the entire hospital system.
Yeah, so I'd say over the last decade, that's been kind of a big thing. There was some Medicare improvement projects during the pandemic and before that, that was looking at some different models. We're paying for treatment in place and telemedicine. So I think that's kind of really a future of using EMS beyond just the classic transportation model, kind of more of a home health, which I think took a little bit of work there working with the home health folks and finding out that, okay, there is a gap between needing full home health and just maybe needing a little bit of help, guidance for, maybe newly diagnosed congestive heart failure. So let's send someone over there, checking your cupboard, weighing your meals, looking at your Frito-Lays that has, 1,200 grams of sodium, and maybe cut back on those. And
that's basically becoming almost like a hospital or physician extender out there in the field. Well, that's, I mean, I love that. Obviously, telemedicine became, it was always a little bit of a thing, but it was kind of in the background pre-COVID. That really pushed it to the forefront. And yeah, I think that's a huge, I agree with you so much. Definitely a huge way to go in the future. Yeah, telemedicine and paramedics and EMS, and what a concept. Sorry, that's just
oh,
me.
No.
I love this because I'm constantly with this podcast. I'm constantly learning. So this is awesome. Let me ask you your clinical opinion on a piece of equipment, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And I always forget the name of it. I call it the pushy thing. So the automatic, the electric defibrillator, or not defibrillators, the electric compression machines. Mm. Now, I know, and I've read the studies, they're very, when set up properly, they're damn efficient. What are your thoughts on those machines? What are your thoughts about them being available to maybe the general public on a rig, or what do you think?
I was involved in Bloomington. We had one for a while. We didn't actually use it. I have used it a couple times when I, near the crossing the boundary, so to speak. It has its use, definitely. I think they found generally it's not anything better or worse, but if you're in the right environment that maybe is resource deficient, it can be very helpful. With being primarily have worked in large urban settings, top 10 to 12 cities in the country, we usually have pretty decent number of resources. So we can rotate, like in Indianapolis, and I think it's the same in Austin here, you get marked a working arrest, like someone's working, you get additional resources, you get another fire engine or someone else. Now you have possibly eight hands rotating in, having good compressors. So you don't really need that. And then decade, 12 years ago, the big focus changed from hurrying up, jumping in the ambulance and going for a cardiac arrest to saying, let's stay, let's slow down, let's do really good compressions, let's do the things, because rushing to give them to a hospital to do the exact same advanced cardiac life support training that we do is just killing them, because you have that hands-off chest time, poor, CCFs and like that. And they're like, looking at studies, they found, oh, if you just stay and do the good things and wait till you get a pulse back, you actually bring back more folks than you just hurry up and leave. And so
those studies are important to know.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I'll say the the band or the plunger devices. there's a couple different varieties. Yep, they can have their place, and with the right applications, yeah.
They do a good job. They do a good job in the right setting and the right situation. That's good to know. So we both have stuff to do. We've got a full day ahead of us, so I don't want to take too much of your time, obviously. I appreciate you so far. This has been really fun and educational. So as you can hear my voice, I start to get more excited as the speaker speaks. But what's something, if you can go back, look at yourself in the beginning of everything, post-Boy Scouts, of course, because that's a little too young. But you look at yourself, knowing what you know now, what's a little bit of advice you'd give to yourself as you're getting into all this healthcare career?
That is a good one.
Every now and then I have a good question.
Yeah, I'd say I wish, learn more about the train to what scares you. That was a helpful thing that, man, I wish I would have just not been real nervous about these things. And I learned later on saying no to more things, saying yes, let me join that committee. Let me do this. I like to keep busy, and that keeps me moving forward. And, probably should have slowed down, take a little more care of myself beforehand. And, yeah.
But it sounds like it took you a little time, but you got to it. You
Yeah.
did that. I mean, you said 100 pounds in the last year or two.
Yeah.
That's I gotta, give you a nod for that. That's important because that's the difference between life and death sometimes. So taking care of ourselves so we can take care of others is
Yep,
important. And we're
exactly.
horrible at it. We're
Oh
absolutely
yeah.
horrible at
Yeah,
it. Yeah.
that's
Yeah.
why, yeah, like reading my, injury reports and collision reports, people just feel like they're in a hurry because they got to help people and then kind of do it at the deficit of theirs. And that's when really focusing on a lot of like human factors type things, like thinking about thinking and saying, okay, when can we slow down for this? And or can we use some type of engineering aid or new piece of equipment for lifting or something like that? And
That's all important. That's all important. We got to take care of ourselves to take care of others. Yeah. Well, Garrett, I got to be honest. This was fun. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insight. It's been a fantastic episode. I can't wait to listen to it.
No.
And I want to thank you for joining us today. Thank you so much for being on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. And you have a great day, let alone the rest of your week.
All right. Hey, you too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Haller. It is produced by Gabriel Haller. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.